I'm surrounded by fugitives from justice. At least one of them, of you all, is a murderer. He had his back to Jack. You're all murderers, come to think of it. Kidnapping, drugs. You've all taken big holes out of people's lives. In this life, who are the bastards? Jack muttered, the fathers or the sons? From the window through the rain, Fletch saw the headlights of the Jeep high on the hill, well above the gully. One of the big flashlights was piercing the dark from the passenger side of the vehicle. Aren't you afraid to stand in the lit window? Jack asked. Under the circumstances? No. Fletch turned his back to the window. Knees apart, arms at his sides, Jack was slouched on the divan. Fletch said, you have your mother's skin. Not all of it. Jack stretched his arms. By a damn sight. How come you're tanned? Fletch asked. How long have you been in prison? 5 weeks. Before that, I was out on bail, just hanging around. Can't get much of a day job when you're out on bail on charges of attempted murder. Why didn't you come here? Didn't want to bother you. Besides, I wasn't supposed to leave Kentucky state of. You escaped from a maximum security federal penitentiary after only 5 weeks? I didn't like it there, Jack said. Noisy. Food could have been better. I'd read all the books in the library. You know karate? A type of. Again, Jack looked at Fletch in surprise. Ah, you were outside, weren't you? You watched me lead my traveling companions to the gully. What's the name of the big one you disciplined with your foot in the side of your hand? Leary, he's crazy. And which is Kriegel? The short, bald guy with eyeglasses. His name is Chris Kriegel, with a K. Would you believe that? How did you follow me? Jack looked at Fletch's sneakers, the cuffs of his jeans. You're not wet. In a more conversational tone, Fletch asked, where is Crystal? Generally or at the moment? Generally and at the moment. Indiana? Is she working as a journalist? Sort of. No. Jack sat forward. She owns 5 radio stations. Good for her. She calls them her money machines. We lived outside Bloomington. He poured himself more milk. At the moment, she's on her semi-annual sojourn on a fat farm. She locks herself up for 2 weeks twice a year, incommunicado, concentrates on losing weight. She has to. If she doesn't, she can't walk. Fletch saw an exasperation based on love in Jack's face. Her legs will crack under her, her veins, her heart. Jack had eaten every bit of food from the tray. You want more food? Fletch asked. Quickly, Jack sat back. No. No, thanks. Maybe later. Fletch sat at the desk. How did you know where I live? We see your name in the newspapers once in a while, ever since you wrote the book Pinto, the biography of Edgar Arthur Tharp, Jr. That was a big success, wasn't it? Fletch asked, did you read it? Yeah. Fletch waited for Jack to say more. After a moment of silence, Fletch said, I guess it's been praised enough. Big book, Jack said. Fletch said, it took a while. Jack took a deep breath. Where do you get off writing a book concerning Native Americans, Indians, white man? Fletch said, where did Edgar Arthur Tharp Jr. get off painting Native Americans, Indians, sculpting them? He was a white man, too. Exactly. He painted and sculpted them as part of their horses. You said so yourself in your book. You wrote, Tharp stretched and lit the naked muscles of the Indian riders exactly as he did the muscles of the horses on which they rode. Right? Right. He painted the women, rounded, with babies on their backs, in the same configurations as the earth mounds behind them. So, Fletch said, you read the book.
I read the book.
You giving me an argument about my work?
I'm giving you an argument.
Okay, Fletch sighed. Where did a Harvard-educated Jewish-American male get off writing, composing, West Side Story about urban Puerto Rican youngsters based on a play about youngsters in Verona, Italy, called Romeo and Juliet, written by a white male Englishman named William Shakespeare, who had never been to Italy? Jack grinned. I guess you're familiar with this argument. Yeah, I've confronted it once or twice. I have been surprised to perceive the prejudice against my work in one or two quarters. What's the answer? In the first place, it never occurred to me. I know what I am, and I know what I am not. At least, unlike some, I know I cannot be someone else.
truly see and feel from someone else's experience and heart. Nevertheless, I have always believed in empathy, in the broad commonality of being human. Admittedly, we cannot understand, but we can try. Two, although Native Americans had and have a great art, Tharp's representation of them and the cowboys, the steam locomotives, the horses, the buffalo, were representations the Indians and the settlers were not about to do themselves. Tharp memorialized them with empathy and love. Without his works, we would know less, understand less. And I tried to memorialize Tharp and his works with empathy and love. You're lecturing. You asked a question, I answered it. You believe in straight lines, don't you? Nature does not love the straight line, Fletch said. Man is compelled to it. Man, broadly speaking. Is that a pun? I think I've just learned not to feed you. Jack folded his arms across his chest. My mother tried to write a book once. She only did about 80 pages. Half of it was about you, half of it was about me. She loves to tell stories about you. She used to beat people over their heads with stories about me. Any of them true? Not really. How about the time you were in Brazil and the people there took you for the ghost of someone murdered even before you were born, and you had no choice but to solve the murder of yourself? Crystal told you that story? What about it? A ghost story. My mother loved you. She still does. She loved you sexually as well, you know. I guess I didn't understand that. You married a royal princess? I saw that in the newspapers, too. I was married to a princess, yes. She was murdered. Assassinated. Why? Middle Europe. Politics, ethnicity. Is ethnicity politics? Oh, yes. In our coming together and our moving apart, just politics. Always just a few people seeking power for themselves. Were you with her when your wife was assassinated? I was in the car behind her. Annie Maggie never thought about politics. She thought about cooking. She thought about the various kinds of fruits and cheeses and sauces, new potatoes and cutlets. Was she fat? No. And you're alone here now on the farm? I was going to apologize to you for all my questions, Fletch said. Oh, I knew you know how to ask questions. You were expecting my questions, weren't you? You were a reporter. Aren't I still? Jack flicked a hand at the study's walls. I don't know any reporter who lives this way. Why don't you have any paintings by Edgar Arthur Tharp? Who can afford them? Besides, I spent years working on Tharp. One likes to think one can come to the end of something. He opened a desk drawer. He took out of it a pistol. From a separate locked drawer, he took out the pistol's cartridge and a box of shells. You know all this about me from newspapers and your mother, is that it? He crossed the study and put the pistol on Jack's lap. He placed the cartridge and the box of shells on the coffee table beside the tray. Jack asked, What's this? A pistol, Fletch answered. Jack sat up with the pistol still on his shorts. I know that. I mean, what are you doing? Giving you a pistol. Why? Besides having the pistol in his lap, Jack was touching no part of it. Are you trying to trick me? Would I do that? Yes, I think so. You weren't with me in the Jeep when I came to that roadblock, nor were you mentioned. An hour later, when the deputies arrived, you were here. How did you get here? Where's your vehicle? People here don't really, really believe frogs drop from the sky in a hard rain. The cops must have a description of you. I want you armed. If the counties come back knowing who you are, I want you to have the decency to tell them you have been holding me and me captive. Load it. Jack put his hand into the box of shells. You still have your pistol. I can make it disappear faster than you can inhale a tuna sandwich. Jack concentrated on loading the cartridge. Fletch said, Aiding a fugitive from justice is against the law. How about arming one? You're not going to shoot anybody. Are you sure? Positive. Jack put only 5 shells into the cartridge. He put the cartridge down. Load the cartridge into the gun, Fletch said. Again, watching himself carefully, Jack slid the cartridge into the handgun's grip. Aren't you going to put a bullet into the chamber? Fletch asked. Later. Jack placed the handgun on the divan beside him. The brass knocker on the front door banged more than a half dozen times. Fletch smiled. He said, Hark. He pulled his shirt out over the butt of the gun in his waistband. On the front porch stood a short, fat, balding man in prison denims. From head to foot and side to side, he was covered with mud and manure. He squinted through filthy, askew, steamed glasses. You're Chris Kriegel, the escaped murderer? Fletch asked. Yeah. Go round back. Fletch slammed the door just as the man stepped toward it. Going back into the study, Fletch said to Jack, It's someone for you. The handgun he had given Jack was not in sight. I sent him around back. If you can't keep the shit out of the house, at least keep the mud out. Mud, the cops will notice. Chapter 5. On the bed, Carrie was sitting on Fletch, still in the position in which both had climaxed. I could sit here forever, Carrie said, feeling you inside me. What would you do if I sat here forever? On his back, Fletch shrugged. Send out for Chinese, I guess. Laughing, Carrie fell to her side on the rumpled bedsheets. Climbing the stairs, Fletch had said to Jack, who was going along the hallway below him toward the back of the house, I'm going to sleep. He did not sleep. He had rapped lightly on the bedroom door and said softly, All escaped convicts are chickens. When he inserted his head around the doorframe into the dawn-lit room, Carrie's big blue eyes were on high beam. The shotgun was on the bed with her, aimed at the door. The index finger of her left hand was on the trigger. Fletch laughed. He closed the door behind him. Everything all right? She asked. All things being relative? Fletch took off his clothes and got onto the bed. You're not ready to go downstairs yet, are you? He asked. No. She proved it. Then, curled beside him, she asked, Have we had any visitors? Yeah, Santa Claus just showed up at the front door. Hate to tell you this, Yankee, but Santa doesn't come in the summertime. She giggled and punched Fletch in the ribs. Poor him. His name is Chris Kriegel. He's short, fat. Her head snapped back for a better look at Fletch's full face. You're serious? Yeah, he's here. Who's here? Chris Kriegel. One of the convicts. I thought I heard a pounding on the front door. It woke me up. Guess he couldn't find one of the chimneys. Two of the other convicts, I guess, are still hiding out in the gully. What gully? The big gully? She moved her head to indicate direction. Yonder? Yeah. How do you know they're there? I sent them there to hide. Michael and Will came for the Jeep. They patrolled the place pretty well. The gully? Carrie made a face. During the storm? You care? Why there? You knew that would turn into a raging flood? God, the snakes! To wear them all out, if we're going to have escaped felons around here, we might as well have exhausted ones. Have them around here? Why didn't you shoot them? Why didn't you turn them all in? You said Michael and Will were here. She sat up, cross-legged on the bed. Instantly, she was picking her fingers. Because of Jack. Who's Jack? Carrie, I think he's my son. Her head snapped to look at him. He sat up, too. I knew a woman once named Crystal Faoni. She was a journalist, too. Fletch spoke rapidly. At a journalist's convention, we made love once. This boy's name is John Fletcher Faoni. He's one of the escaped convicts, or at least he says that's his name. He seems to know about Crystal, about me. Faoni, she spoke slowly. You recognized his name last night at the roadblock. That's why you began making sandwiches when you got home. It's not that common a name. Your son? Why didn't you tell me?
I wasn't sure.
I mean, why didn't you ever tell me you have a son?
I never knew he existed until he walked through the French doors of the study last night. Crystal is one of these women who wanted to have the baby, raise the child on her own. I believe that's true.
She never let you know?
Nope. Are you upset about that? Of course.
How did you know he likes tuna puffs?
Always Fletch was amazed at the acuity of Carrie's questions. Next to hers, District Attorney Alston Chambers' questions were vague. Last night he would have eaten refried roadkill. She put her hand on his forearm.
I'm sorry.
Attempted murder, Fletch said. He took a shot at a cop.
E equals MC squared.
Such was Carrie's expletive. She considered the theory of relativity the most outlandish thing she had ever heard of. She looked out the window.
It stopped raining.
I think it will be a bright, hot day.
The field's got a good wetting, she said.
It flattened the corn.
It'll spring up again.
She got up off the bed.
Why are you putting up with this? Even if he is maybe your son, he tried to kill someone. I mean, you have no responsibility for him. How old is he?
Curiosity.
You know what curiosity did to the orangutan.
What did curiosity do to the orangutan?
Go ask him. He's still sitting over in the Memphis Zoo. You saw how hellfire angry he still is.
You heard the sheriff last night. For some reason, these escapees went well out of their way to come here, to this farm, this house, specifically. This kid Jack led them here. Why?
Carrie said simply, to kill you.
Why? You're his father. You popped his mother and left her. You ignored him all his life.
No, Fletch said. He knows I never knew of his existence. The only thing is, well, I never called Crystal, an old friend, and said, how are you doing? That's not a capital crime. This is a crazy mixed-up kid. He shot a cop.
Shot at a cop, supposedly.
She looked down at him.
What do you mean, supposedly?
He said he fired a .32 at her. I just gave him my .32 to load. I watched him. It seemed to me he had to figure out how to load it. I don't think he knew how to chamber a bullet. He seemed to have a revulsion toward the gun.
He should have, Carrie snapped. What would you expect? And he shot at a woman cop?
Blue is blue, Fletch said, I guess.
You're making up excuses, she said. You think he's your son and you're trying to like him.
She was reading Fletch's face.
You think this boy has anything but green water between his ears?
Fletch thought of the conversation he and Jack had had about Pinto.
Enough to be a pest.
Forearms folded over her breasts, Carrie said,
These bastards in this house?
There's still two outside. I guess I ought to go get them, bring them in.
Into this house?
This old house has been occupied by worse, I expect, Fletch said.
Yankees, probably.
Carrie was listening.
What's that? Someone playing the radio?
Someone playing the guitar.
Who?
Jack.
Jack, she expostulated, you call his name just as if he's someone you know.
I'm getting to know him, Fletch said, a little bit. They listened to the acoustic guitar being played downstairs. Carrie said, he plays beautifully.
So he does.
Still, Carrie said uncertainly,
I think you ought to call the sheriff and have them all picked up, including your Jack. If he shot at a cop, he needs nothing more than being put in a pit with fire ants.
She was looking across the bed at the telephone. By the way, Fletch said, the phones are dead. They cut the wires.
I didn't think they came here to cook, clean, and paint fences. Does your cellular phone work?
Yes, but I don't want them to know I have it. I want to get these guys out of here before the telephone company discovers the wires have been cut. I told Will and Michael last night I'm driving Jack to the University of North Alabama this morning.
They saw him? They met him?
They even talked with him. He was as smooth as a Mississippi River stone. Michael even invited him fishing.
You passed him off as your son?
I sweet-talked him, a little.
So you're stuck, aren't you? You're as stuck as the smile on a beauty queen's face.
Except I gave Jack the .32, so he can hold us captive, if the cops come back.
Say what?
Wide-eyed, she was looking down at him, sitting cross-legged on the bed.
You done real good, Fletch. You've brought fugitive felons, murderers and such like, into this house and armed them. Against ourselves. Against the cops. When you came into this room, didn't I ask you if everything was all right?
And I said, all things being relative.
That was a joke?
In fact, Carrie did smile.
Carrie, this kid wants something from me. How do I know what to believe?
How do you know what to believe?
He wants you to save his ass.
Maybe. I think it's worth stringing him along a little, extending myself to find out what, why.
Picking her fingers, listening to the guitar, Carrie said, You're always playing, Fletch. You still think you can handle anything. Everything.
No, in fact, I don't. There are just things here that don't add up. I want to know why.
Looking through the window again, Carrie said, If we're going to give these felons breakfast, we'll need the eggs from the hen house.
I'll get them.
Fletch sprang off the bed.
I allus obeys Miss Carrie.
Chapter 6.
Aha! Now I see!
Shiny clean, even unto his eyeglasses, his soft body encased in a guest bathrobe, Kriegel exclaimed when Fletch entered the study. The man had a saddle-shaped birthmark on the bridge of his nose.
Come here, he said to Fletch grandly.
Fletch stayed where he was. Behind Kriegel, Jack was standing stiffly. Kriegel came to Fletch. With both hands, he fingered Fletch's head. He stood on tiptoes to do so. He walked around Fletch, looking him up and down.
You are Jack's father.
You're a phrenologist? Fletch asked. He frowned at Jack.
You have the same bones, the same blood.
You're a nut? Fletch asked. Turning, Kriegel went to Jack and clasped him by the shoulders.
This man is your father. Why didn't you tell me? He is one of us. We are saved.
Praise the Lord, Fletch said.
Introduce me, Kriegel ordered Jack.
Father, Jack said, standing at attention, this is the Reverend Dr. Chris Kriegel. For an instant, Jack put his hand to his mouth. Dr. Kriegel, this is my father, Erwin Maurice Fletcher. Kriegel said,
I'm so pleased.
Fletch said, charmed, I'm sure. Fletch saw that Kriegel, for all his role-playing as an emperor or whatever, was fighting hard to stay awake. He was intoxicated with exhaustion. His arms and legs moved as if they were in water. Blinking, his eyelids spent longer closed than open. When not speaking, he breathed through his nose more in the rhythm of sleep than wakefulness. Like a drunk pretending to be sober, Kriegel was only pretending to be awake, alert. At the moment, he was no threat to anyone.
Ah!
Kriegel was looking toward a curtain of one of the French doors. He staggered to it.
Poor butterfly,
Fletch said. That's a moth. Gently, Kriegel cupped both hands over the moth on the curtain, capturing it. He brought it to the open French window. With a grand gesture, he released the moth into the morning sky.
You're free! Fly away home, little butterfly!
I suspect its home is in my wardrobe, Fletch said. There is someone else in this house, Jack said sternly to Fletch. I heard the bed jumping. He pointed to the ceiling. You were right over this room. We heard you too, Fletch said. You play the guitar well. I recognized it as a Segovia arrangement of something, but I don't remember of what. Who is upstairs? Jack asked. Nashville? Fletch asked. You were headed for Nashville in a pink Cadillac? Near the windows, Kriegel swayed, eyes closed. Your playing could charm a colicky baby covered with poison ivy, Fletch said. Kriegel's eyes popped open when Carrie entered the study. He gasped. He raised his arms at his side.
Brunhilde!
Brunhilde? In her tanned, freckled face, Carrie's wide-set blue eyes were flashing. Having ruled six large brothers, hefty farm workers, an ex-husband, sons, various obstreperous small children and large animals, Carrie was the most dangerous person in that house, on the farm at that moment, Fletch reflected. Everyone might as well know it. Having glanced contemptuously and dismissively at the Reverend Dr. Chris Kriegel, who looked like a dust ball in the gray robe, fuzzy gray hair sticking out over his ears, backlit against the French doors, she stared at Jack. Jack returned the stare.
Jack, Kriegel said. Is this your mother?
Jack swallowed hard. Of course not. Carrie was considerably younger than Fletch and looked even younger than she was. Kriegel took a few steps toward Carrie and Fletch. It seemed his intent to take them by the hands. Fletch stuck his hands in the pockets of his shorts. Carrie turned her body square to him. Clearly, she was prepared to break his nose if he touched her.
Brunhilde and Siegfried, Kriegel said. How wonderful!
What's his engine revving for? Carrie asked. Fletch said, I think we've caught a racist.
E equals MC squared.
She pointed her index finger at Kriegel.
You,
she pointed at the divan.
Go over there and lie down. You're half stupid tired. Your other half is probably just plain stupid.
Shoulders drooping, Kriegel crossed the room to the divan.
And we don't want to hear no more of your stupid shit about Brunhilde and what's-his-face. You hear?
Kriegel sat on the divan. He folded his hands in his lap. Smiling, he closed his eyes. She asked Fletch,
Who's what's-his-face?
Siegfried?
I never heard of none such.
Ask Wagner.
Who's Wagner?
Wrote music.
Got kinfolk around here?
Possibly. Again she was staring at Jack as she would a horse before saddling him.
Shit,
she said. He's your son, all right.
Clear as a church bell on a crisp night. He's got your body.
Oh, don't say that, Fletch said. Last time someone said that about me and someone else, one of us got shot through a window.
It wasn't you?
She asked. It wasn't me.
I, Jack said. It wasn't I, great writer.
Carrie pointed her finger in Jack's face.
And that's exactly enough sass out of you, you unbroke pony. You do any bucking around here, and I'll personally whip your ass all the way back to that stable you come from in Kentucky. And you better believe it.
Jack's face couldn't be more startled if she had punched him hard. He put his shoulders back.
Yes, ma'am.
Eyes closed on the couch, Kriegel chuckled.
Wonderful,
I've found them.
Quietly, smiling to himself, Fletch said, You all better believe it.
Ruining your life the way you done? Taking a pot shot at a woman just doing her work? Handsome boy like you? The way you play that guitar? What's the matter with you anyway, boy?
Clearly Jack had never been laced out by a southern woman before. Carrie continued.
What are you doing here anyway? Never got in touch with your father all the years you're growing up? The minute you get in big trouble, running from the law, you show up here in the middle of the night dragging these ugly messes behind you? What you want, boy?
Jack glanced at Fletch.
She waved her hand at him. I've heard and seen enough of you already. You guys go get some eggs.
She looked at the obedient Kriegel asleep on the divan.
If that bag of manure moves one flap, I'll blast his parts all over the cornfield.
Fletch said to Jack, She will. You'd better believe it. Outside, Jack asked,
Eggs, how far is the store?
Fletch ambled toward the barns. Although the sun was just above the horizon, it already made steam rise from the puddles. As he crossed the road, Fletch heard Emery's truck coming down the hill. That truck hadn't had a complete muffler in recent memory and could be heard well before being seen. Jack walked beside Fletch.
Who's she? Jack asked.
Carrie.
You two married?
No.
You gonna get married?
These days, you marry a woman and two lawyers. Beds just aren't that big.
Jack said, She doesn't hesitate to rush in where fools would fear to tread, does she?
Fletch said, When Carrie twangs, you'd better listen.
Jack pointed across the home pasture at the cottage. No one lives there. I checked last night.
I can't figure out how you found this place so exactly yesterday, Fletch said. Running from the law, through a storm. You've cruised this place before, haven't you? Scoped me out.
Yes.
As the man answered when a friend told him he has passed his house the day before, thanks.
Most of the cattle on the hills were visible cropping the fields. Later, once the sun was higher in the sky, they would disappear in the deep shade of the trees.
What crime put your Chris Kriegel in jail?
When he first came from South Africa, Jack said, in a hotel in Washington, the chambermaid, bringing in a mint for his pillow or something, opened the door of his room just as he finished strangling a girl from some escort service. He was caught red-handed, bare-assed and red-handed.
Red-assed?
How long has he been in prison?
5, 6 years.
Fletch led Jack into the dark cool of the barn. What's this the Reverend Doctor stuff?
I believe he has a PhD from someplace, a real one.
Subject?
History, probably. Sociology? I don't know.
And the Reverend part?
I think he gave himself that while in prison. Sent $5 for a certificate to someone advertising in the back of a magazine or something.
At one of the barn's stalls, Fletch slipped the bit in Heathcliff's mouth, the bridle and reins over his head. He fastened the buckle.
And what's your relationship to him?
Jack said, I'm his lieutenant.
I see.
Fletch led Heathcliff out of the stall.
Where are you going? Jack asked. How far is this store? Do you think you're getting away?
I'm going up the hill to get your two other traveling companions. Want to come? There's another horse there.
Jack was trying to stay close to Fletch, but away from Heathcliff.
They're too big.
Not so big. Fletch climbed onto the horse.
Or you could jog along beside me.
Don't you need a saddle?
Fletch was riding through the back doorway of the barn into the corral.
Open that gate for me, will you?
Hey, Jack trotted behind the horse.
You're riding a horse barebacked in shorts.
Yeah, Fletch said. Just like a Native American.
Fletch sat on the horse at the lower end of the gully.